Thank you for joining me on another episode of She Leads Now podcast, where we help career and entrepreneurial women gain the tools to develop a success mindset, create winning strategies, build collaborative relationships, and take bold action towards creating impact and fulfillment in their lives and careers. I'm your host, Sabine Gideon, and I'm on a mission to awaken and activate women and emerging leaders so they can tap into their innate leadership ability, elevate their influence, and create the impact they were destined to make. If you're ready to uplevel your confidence, courage, and influence, you've come to the right place. Join me weekly for insights, strategies, and resources to help you grow, develop, and embody the leader you were meant to be, so that you can make the impact you know you are called to make and establish the legacy you've always dreamed. The world eagerly awaits the emergence of your brilliance, impact, and influence. So with that, let's dive into this week's episode. Hello and welcome and happy Wednesday, everyone. I'm excited to be bringing you another installment of the Lead Hership in Action series. And so with that, I will introduce myself first and then introduce Dr. Christine. So I'm Sabine Gideon. I serve in the capacity of an executive career and leadership consultant. I'm also the host of She Leads Now and the author of Lead Hership Reloaded. So I'm excited to have you here today. And so without further ado, I will introduce my guest. Dr. Christine Fusilier is a wife, mother, business owner, leadership engineer, diversity and emotional intelligence consultant, and academic leader. She is currently the Dean of Instruction at Bryan Stratton Colleges, where she leads a team of program directors, faculty, and staff. She also chairs the Richmond Campus DSI Diversity, Sensitivity, and Inclusion Committee and serves on their corporate level DSI committee. She is the owner of The Leadership Doctor, which is a leadership and diversity consulting firm, and has published 3 books, The Business of You, Leadership Rex, and You've Been Gifted Cancer. And I believe there's a so what after that, right?
Right.
I love that. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. Christine.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Yes. And every time we get to connect is a blessing. I mean, we were chit-chatting it up in the green room before I realized I needed to get on. So for those of you who are tuning in, you are in for a great conversation. So you were on the series last year. I can't believe it's already been a year. We were talking about, you know, post-pandemic, what does this mean for leadership? What does this mean for DEI? What does this look like in the higher ed space? Just because they had been shaken up in so many different ways. So before we get into, you know, what do things look like a year later, I'd love for you to share, you know, some of the most significant career milestones or catalysts that you've had leading up to this point where you are this powerhouse at the school, well as within your own business.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think my career has put me on this entirely different trajectory, which really started, I believe, with education. And it allowed me to be able to pivot in different areas from being in the corporate space, to moving into academia, to being an author, a business owner, speaker, and all of those things. And most recently, I've been really going on this, I'll say a tour, if you will, of leadership and emotion, the tie between leadership and emotional intelligence. Because I think a lot of things, issues that we may have are rooted in emotional intelligence, what that looks like, how do we manage our emotions, things like that. So I've been on that journey, and it's been great to see how it has impacted many people that I consult, as well as my students here and my team.
Awesome. So you've been on a tour. Tell us a little bit more about this tour, because, again, you serve so many different groups, if you will. And so tell us about, you know, where you are today. What topics do you enjoy talking to the most? And you feel has been most impactful during your tour?
Yeah, so I have been on I went to a leadership conference, had the opportunity to spend some time in Ohio working with, a diverse group of people in the LGBTQIA space, and also being able to work with some people. You know, I'm breast cancer survivor, so working in that space on how do we lead our way through such a traumatic experience. And I'm also this Friday, I'll be speaking with our Chesterfield County Diversity Symposium, and we'll be talking about diversity and biases and things like that. So it's been one thing after the other, but it's all ties together in the three topics that I feel that are so important in our industries, across industries. That's leadership, that's diversity, and that's emotional intelligence.
Yeah. So we were talking about this a little bit in the green room that, you know, much of the work that you do today is a result of some of the experiences that you've had personally. And so, you know, for those of you who heard the introduction, you heard that I shared that she has three books that she's put out. She supports emerging leaders, or at least those who are still in school, understanding or uncovering their leadership ability, as well as those who sit in leadership seats across organizations and across industries. So as we think about, you know, from our conversation last year, where things were just starting to unfold and in many ways settle down, you know, a year later, what have you seen in terms of change for the better, meaning that we've transformed some of the systems that existed? And where do you still see opportunity?
I see we're still on this continuum of talking about diversity. And we know in 2020 is what kind of triggered more awareness. And typically it is a event that does trigger a heightened awareness of diversity. But I'm glad to see that more organizations, schools, they are embedding it into the culture more. So it won't be such a reactive thing, because from 2022 onward, many organizations were reacting. So how do we talk about the hard topics? How do we have courageous conversations around diversity? And how do we get better in this space? And that's from how do we create a more diverse workforce? How do we manage a diverse workforce? All of those things. So I've seen that get better. And that's very comforting in this space, because sometimes it can be like, oh, it's a moment in time, and then it goes away. But I see that there is many organizations have committed to it, embedded in everything within their culture, including their strategic plans, which is awesome. And it becomes, so it's not a reactive thing when it comes up. I think our opportunities are to continue down that path, but also bring in other pieces to why it's such a struggle for people or organizations when it comes to diversity. And that is that leadership piece and that emotional intelligence piece. How do you weave those all together? Because they're all connected. And I think that's the opportunity. So we open up the conversation to bring all of those components in as well.
Yeah. You know, I think it's funny and not funny at the same time that, you know, we're certain institutions. And when I say institutions, I mean like the work institution, if you will, is really struggling so much with what it looks like to embrace diversity and create spaces where diversity is not something that needs to be called out, but is something that is embedded. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, you look at our society as a whole, right? Like, we live in a diverse society. While we may choose to, you know, associate or live in certain places where it's a bit more homogenous, the point is, like, you can't walk down the street and not see or experience someone who looks different than you or may have a different lived experience. And then you look at Gen Z, where roughly 40% of them are from, you know, multiple races, right, or multiple backgrounds. So you have an entire generation that exists that almost 50% of them aren't, you know, one race, so to speak. So I just find it interesting that we're grappling. I guess the good thing is that there have been some changes, but I just find it interesting that we grapple with how do we then create a space for the humans that we interact with and we see and we deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah. I think I was just having this conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and it's about the why, especially when we're looking at organization. What is the why? And if nothing else, it's a great business case to show all the value added when you talk about diversity, everything from having a more inclusive, collaborative team to the financial benefits that it offers, to the branding benefits that it offers. So there's so much more that it offers, even if it's something that people struggle with internally. As a business owner, as a business leader, as an entrepreneur, the business case is very strong, and there's countless research on the benefits of diversity. And then if that is ignored, most companies aren't doing well who are not inclusive, who are not sensitive, culturally sensitive, and they're struggling. So that, if nothing else, the business case is enough for people to say, well, maybe let me find out more about this. How do I become more diverse as an organization or as a leader?
Yeah. And as far as emotional intelligence, because I know you mentioned that as being one of the pillars of where you focus your attention, are you leveraging that for both leaders within organizations, or are you also shaping the minds of the young men and women that you service through the school as well?
I'm doing both, because I think it's important. I wish emotional intelligence was taught early on, like in our K through 12s, but I have the opportunity, because I have a captive audience, to really teach our students how to understand their emotions, understand the triggers that they have, how do you manage triggers? Because emotions are part of the human experience, so there's no cutting it off. It's about how do you manage it, and how do you navigate through this thing called life? And I know nowadays it's a lot different for when I how do you navigate your emotions through this thing called life without it being negatively impacting you long term? And how do you grow from the experiences that you have from an emotional standpoint? So what I'm working with my students, I'm very clear on, sometimes you got to identify it when it's happening. What is that I'm feeling? What's the trigger that's causing it? And how do I manage through it? And give them tools to do that. I have this whole exercise, like the GPS through emotional intelligence, and how do you find your way? How do you reroute? And how do you stop? And how do you move forward? And how do you go a different direction? So I use those to help our students navigate through it. And then as leaders, because you're leading people, the human experience, again, they have emotions as well. And as a leader, you definitely have to learn how to manage your emotions. And you have to also be able to identify the emotions that your team may be having. And you will be able to deal with the situation a lot different if you are in tune to this person is either having a crisis, or they're upset about something, or they're really happy about something. But you're picking up on their emotions. That helps you become a better leader. Because it's picky cutter. You're really dealing with the individual.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's another one that I think all of us as a society are coming to. I appreciate the fact that you're introducing students to emotional intelligence, because Lord knows that it wasn't a thing, or, you know, it existed, but it didn't have a name. It didn't have a framework. And so we were adults and kind of had to say, oh, well, how do you apply this? And I also think that when you look at the generations, you know, I'm coming from a generation, my parents are boomers, where it was like, you don't show emotion.
Right.
Or if you did, then, you know, somehow there was some level of guilt or shame, or, you know, disregarded. And so as an adult, I had to learn how to tap into my own emotions just for my own sanity, let alone how that shows up in the workplace. And so, you know, I think it's important that we're teaching the next generation, if you will, how to tap into their emotions. And I think the beautiful thing about Gen Z and even like some of the younger millennials, that they are very in tune with their emotions. Like, that to me seems like that's not really their problem. It's how do they fit in, if you will, or how do they leverage their emotional intelligence into these spaces and these structures and these systems that people who weren't well tapped into their emotions have created. And so I see that it's a beautiful opportunity for us to learn from them in how to express our emotions and share what it is that we're thinking and feeling, but also an opportunity to mentor them so that they can do it in a way that is mature and does not create more challenges. So right. I see the double opportunity there for mentorship and learning.
Correct. And you see that there's a diversity of generations in that space that we have to acknowledge. So we do acknowledge, to your point, that when we were coming up, emotions were, you don't display them, especially publicly. And now our generation now, they're open to doing it and they're very open about their emotions. But then we, as an older generation, should help them better manage it. Because again, it's happening. It's nothing that you should shut someone down for having, but they should feel like this is where the inclusivity comes in. They must be in an environment where it is inclusive and safe for them to maybe have those emotions and teach them how to manage the emotion and kind of root cause it. Because, you know, you have six levels initially. So you have sadness, you have happiness, you have being glad, fear, and those things. But behind the initial emotion, there's something else. So they kind of help them see what's specifically making you afraid. And there's a layer, there's like three dimensions of our emotions that you help them to unpack, and they see what the original trigger was. And then they'll be able to better manage it in the future.
Yeah. I think the other thing, and this is just something that I've learned on my journey of tuning into my emotions, is that, you know, it really boils down to, like, yes, what is the emotion behind the emotion? But also what meaning have we given certain emotions, right? Yeah. Like, there's that whole notion of, you know, oh, this emotion is bad and this emotion is good. And usually those are messages that we've gotten from others to define what that is. And so, you know, for many, while we know that fear is a natural emotion, we all experience fear, we all feel fear, maybe at different levels, but society, our parents, everyone tells us, like, no, like, fear is a bad thing. Fear is a bad thing.
Right.
And so when we feel fear, we run away versus leaning into, okay, well, what is fear trying to tell me? And then vice versa, you know, everybody wants to be happy and everybody wants to be joyful and everybody wants to be excited all the time because those are quote unquote good feelings, right? And we will move towards, or we will force sometimes those feelings in situations that don't exist. So I think that that's an important distinction as well, that, you know, we get to a place where, yes, we can name the emotions. We can identify what the trigger, the initial trigger is, but also let go of whatever judgment we've been taught in terms of whether or not this is a good emotion or a bad emotion, and just accept that it's part of the human experience and it is just an emotion.
Exactly. And then as they move into careers, or as they move into being entrepreneurs, then those tools they can use to help others and help their team, you know? So I think it's important that you use all three of them to help build or create or grow a better leader. And I think that's another opportunity we have in our society, is our leadership, you know, from the church house to the courthouse, we have a leadership gap. And I think it stems from a lot of emotional intelligence, or lack thereof sometimes. And how do you reconcile that? You know, and that requires a lot of change, a lot of switching of our mindsets, and a lot of openness to what does the new version of leadership looks like?
Yeah, I totally agree. And so, just shifting gears here, you know, as you're ramping down 2023 and then starting to gear up for 2024, you know, as we look ahead, if you could identify one or two critical places for leaders within organizations to really start to focus their attention as it relates to, you know, being better leaders and creating these inclusive spaces, what would those core areas be?
I always start with people. I think you treat your people right. Your people are going to take care of your organization. So a good leader, and we need a lot more focus on the people. And often in leadership, people are focusing on the numbers. And while you need the numbers to run the to make the organization profitable, the people are making it happen. So focus on the people and how do you help inspire, motivate them to be better. And a good leader is not about how many people that you're leading. It's not about how many people are following you. It's about how many leaders you can create. So positioning yourself as a leader to be a mentor, to help coach and develop other people so that they can have a leader. Because the worst thing you can do is walk into an organization and you have people who've been there for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. There's no succession plan. So there's no growth, you know. So having a plan to help grow and create other leaders, that's what a good leader does. And that's their legacy, right? They have people who will always speak about how they were learned, they were developed and coached and mentored by another leader. I think that's the main thing. And then focusing on the inclusivity, because there's so many missed opportunities when we when we exclude people. But I will caution, don't be so inclusive that you become exclusive. So you exclude some people because you're trying to include everybody, everything. So you have to be strategic about it. And it has to be inclusive where not just we have a diverse workforce, but our workforce also has a seat at the table. Our workforce voices are being heard and they're in a safe space, in a space where they can have those opinions. They can have those feelings. They can have those hard conversations, and it's not punitive. I think those are the two main areas that as organizations that we need to have our leaders put more attention to it, our people and being in an inclusive environment.
Yeah, I totally agree with those. Two things that I wanted to share. I love that you said the thing about leaders creating more leaders. I personally believe that is a good sign of an effective leader. And now, mind you, my philosophy is that we're all leaders, right? We all have the capacity to lead. But I do think that individuals who sit in seats of authority have an obligation and a responsibility to not just lead whatever vision or whatever mission that they're working toward, but to ensure that they have recreated themselves, hoping that, you know, who they are is something that we want recreated. But all things being equal, that they have created and that they have instilled and that they have empowered those who report into them or work with them to be able to lead in that same level and or, you know, in whatever sphere they're meant to in building that confidence. And I think the other thing as far as inclusivity goes, you know, some conversations that I've had in the recent months, in some organizations, obviously this is not all, but in some organizations, there's still a reluctance. While there is buy-in with regards to creating a more inclusive environment, while there are programs in place to help develop, women, to help develop underrepresented groups so that they can move into leadership spaces, there's still a reluctance to actually be open sharing data, right? So it's almost like, You can't create a strategy if you don't know where you are today. And I'm still hearing a year later or 3 years later at this point that organizational leaders are still very apprehensive, very uneasy with putting it out there of this is our current state. And that to me is baffling because it is from the current state that you can acknowledge, you know, this is where we are. That's all it means. All it means is this current state and we have work to do. And I feel that in situations where, yes, the programs are there, the resources are there and everything else is there, but we won't we won't expose what current state is, like that's a huge misstep. So I would add that as a third thing to what you shared in terms of, you know, organizations who have not quite gotten their mind around like, hey, this is our reality. As with any of us, right? Where we are today is not a reflection of necessarily where we are today. It is a reflection of decisions that we've made in the past. It is a reflection of actions that we've taken in the past or may have not taken in the past. And so I think leaders have an opportunity to give themselves some grace and expect grace from those in their organizations if their current state isn't quote unquote perfect or woke or elevated.
That's a great point. I recall I was working at an organization where we were introducing diversity and ERG groups, employee resource groups. And the chairman at the time, he said, I don't know anything about this. They shared the numbers with us. And the fear is immediately people are going to judge. And they shared the numbers, and the way they shared them was that we are embarrassed about what we've seen, but we want to do better. So they looked to their leaders, their affinity groups, leadership within their affinity groups to create these ERGs so that we can learn how to do better. So it's rooted, sometimes that's rooted in the fact, like you said, it's embarrassing. And, or some people are in denial, but owning up to it is one of the things that showed it separated him from many other leaders I've seen throughout my career. Like he was able to say, I'd never operated in this space before. He's like, I'm a white guy from Kansas. I never knew. I don't even know how to move around in this diversity space. So he was looking to us to help build it. And the numbers helped us show the transparency that he had. That gave us at least some comfort to say that he was committed to making the changes that needed to be made in the organization. So that's a great point that it is an opportunity for organizations to, you know, do equity studies and see what that looks like and not be afraid to show what that looks like to the teams. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity, I think, across the board.
Yeah. And I love that leader's vulnerability, but it also goes back to what we've been talking about with regards to the emotional intelligence, right? So if the apprehension to share or to even look at this data is rooted in fear of, you know, what people are going to think or judgment or even shame in some capacities, right? How can you ever heal from that? Or how can you ever address that? Or how can you ever create a culture in which individuals, you know, demonstrate emotional intelligence if you as the leader won't first base your emotions? And again, shame, while no one wants to feel shame, it is still part of the human experience. And when we don't face anything, right, what we don't face will eventually face us at some point. So I think to your point earlier, it all ties in. That individual awareness of self and then looking at how that's showing up in the decisions that you're making, the actions that you're taking, how you're treating others, how you welcome others' emotions, like it's all intertwined. I'm hopeful that, you know, as we move into 2024 and even the years to come, that we start to see more leaders giving themselves permission to show up as themselves and not this archetype that we've created in our minds, in our society, of what it means to be a leader.
Yeah. I think one of the call to actions I would have for leadership is there's work to be done. And that work starts with us. Like we have to, from everything from unconscious biases that we may have in this diversity space, our mindset of what that looks like from like our brand, like how we're protecting our brand. Brand protection can cause a lot of how we react as leaders, right? We don't want the brand to be hurt. So a call to action for leaders is start doing the work internally first. It's like with anything, you have to do it with yourself before you can help anyone else. Identify, like, you know, I'll go back to unconscious bias, identify that you have biases, which is why some people struggle so hard with diversity, equity, and inclusion. So do the work there first. And that work could be sitting in the space where you're uncomfortable and kind of root causing, why am I so uncomfortable? Again, that ties into emotional intelligence, right? So there's some kind of uncomfortability, like dig in and like work through why you're feeling that way. And then validate your biases or unvalidate them, if you will. But why do you have a bias? And, people are not monoliths. So you may have had an experience with a certain type of person, but that does not mean all people are that way. You may have had a feeling about a certain person, but that doesn't mean you have that feeling toward all people. But you have to do the work. You have to identify this work to be done, and it has to start first with a leader. You can't lead other people if you can't lead yourself. I think that is what's key. If you can't lead yourself, you can possibly lead other people.
Facts. Thank you for sharing that. So we're going to get into the Blitz mission here for those of you who are listening to the podcast. Hopefully you've gotten some tidbits that Dr. Christine has brought some hope this morning for us with regards to the changes and the shifts that are taking place. Of course, I will have her share all of her information so that we could include that in the links. So that while she continues her tour going into 2024, if you want to connect with her and touch base and learn more about the powerful work that she is doing across DEI, across emotional intelligence, across leadership in general, then you can do that. For those of you who are listening to the show, I just want to remind you that the book that inspired this conversation is Leadership Reloaded, Reimagining, Redefining, and Rehumanizing Leadership, where I spoke with maybe almost three dozen amazing women, powerhouses such as Dr. Christine, to learn about, you know, where we are with the current landscape and have distill that information in a way that both organizations and individual leaders can really understand what the landscape looks like, where there are opportunities, and how they can become self-advocates for themselves within their career. So it is available on Amazon. Feel free to go and grab your copy, Leadership Reloaded, or you can type in my name and I'm sure it'll come up. So with that, as we move into the Blitz session here, Dr. Christine was episode 50, I believe. As you think about just over the last year, I know you do a lot of reading just by nature of your work. Have there been any new books or any books that have come to mind that have been pivotal for you or that you would highly recommend to the audience?
Absolutely. Outside of my books. This is a book that's called The Self-Aware Leader by John Maxwell. I actually have my team reading this book because, as I stated earlier, I think not only emotional intelligence, but leadership starts with self first. You can't lead others until you're able to lead yourself. And this book gives a lot of detail about how do you do everything from handling criticism with grace as a leader, because when you're in leadership roles, you know, there's always someone who can say, well, if I was in charge, I would do it this way. Or I don't think I disagree. So how do you handle criticism with grace? This book, like I said, I have my team walking through this book so that, again, we can evolve as a leadership team. And then we're able to show that when we're in front of our students and our peers to make sure that we're not only just, I believe the old saying, you know, whether a leader is born or made, and that's always a debate, depending on who you talk to. Either way, whether they're born or made, they still have to grow. And in the growing piece, that's where things like this book comes from, conferences. You have constantly have to evolve, because I think as a leader, it's your skill, right? This is your thing. Just like a doctor has to keep up to date as to what's happening in their field, a leader has to do the same. So you have to continually grow. You have to continually invest in yourself And if you're growing other leaders or creating other leaders, you have to invest in them as well and help them grow. So it becomes a continual thing, you know. So that this is the book that I'm reading now.
Okay, awesome. We will definitely be sure to include that in the show notes. And I love that statement. Regardless of whether or not a leader is born or made, they still have to grow. Like that in itself is a mic drop right there. So thank you for sharing that. And it's so true. So as far as, you know, how those who are listening or those who are watching, if they want to get in touch with you, learn more about the work that you do, what's the best way to do that? And where do you hang out on social?
The easiest way is through LinkedIn. That's where most of my stuff is centralized. Just type my name in LinkedIn. I usually post what my next thing is going to be. And people can reach out if they have questions or want to have a conversation.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. And so as we wrap up, I want to share two things from our conversation last year. So just because I love it so much, your advice to your younger self is to know your worth and be unapologetic for being you. Don't negotiate your worth. I think that is just such amazing advice. And my current self needs that reminder at times. So thank you for sharing that and allowing us to have that as a reminder. And then your desired legacy is to be remembered as a person who impacted the lives of everyone she touched, good, bad, or ugly, and did it intentionally.
You know, constantly evolving. There's a word that people are saying, or a word or a statement that you hear people say, it's called imposter syndrome. And as a leader, I've never experienced that, because I will tell anybody who knows their worth that whatever role you walk in, you own that role. That imposter syndrome, that's about projecting sometimes what you think other people think about you opposed to what you think about you. So if you know your worth, you won't have imposter syndrome, because you're not an imposter. Whatever role you walk in, you deserve to be there and act as such.
I love it. I love it. With that, I thank you again for being on the show. I appreciate your time, your wisdom, your sharing a year later what's working. And again, thank you for the hope that you've shared this morning. For those of you who are listening, the actual links to connect with Dr. Christine will be in the show notes, as well as the links to her books. All three of them. So please be sure to check those out. And of course, connect with her on LinkedIn. Let her know that you heard her on the She Lead Now podcast. And with that, have a wonderful week, everyone. And we will be back next week with another wonderful powerhouse. Take care.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of She Leads Now. If you found today's episode helpful or got a piece of insight that you plan to implement in your business or organization, I would love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn at Sabine Gideon, that's my handle, and send me a private message, or feel free to go ahead and leave a review on either Apple or Spotify. I also invite you to share this episode with anyone in your network who you think might benefit from this content. Lastly, be sure to check the show notes and the description below for links to resources, including relevant downloads, articles, and any upcoming training. Until we chat again, have a blessed and powerful week.